Children of the New World by Alexander Weinstein. Read for you by David Aaron Baker. George is outside throwing a football around with his identical twins when I pull in. He raises his hand to his kids to stop them from throwing the ball and comes over to the low hedge that separates our driveways. "Hey, how'd it go with Russ?" he asks as I get out of the car. "Not good." I tell him about Yang, getting a second opinion, how I got his voice box in the back seat, his body in a large, quick-fix bag in the trunk. I tell him all this with as little emotion as possible. "What can you expect from electronics?" I say, attempting to appear nonchalant.
"Man, I'm really sorry for you," George says, his voice quieter than I've ever heard it. "Yang was a good kid. I remember the day he came over to help Dana carry in the groceries. The kids still talk about that fortune-telling thing he showed them with the three coins."
"Yeah," I say, looking at the bushes. I can feel the tears starting again. "Anyhow, it's no big deal. Don't let me keep you from your game. We'll figure it out." Which is a complete lie. I have no clue how we're going to figure anything out. We needed Yang. There's no way we can afford another model.
"Hey, listen," George says. "If you guys need help, let us know. You know, if you need a day sitter or something, I'll talk to Dana. I'm sure she'd be up for taking Mika."
George reaches out across the hedge, his large hand coming straight at me. For a moment, I flash back to championship boxing and think he's going to hit me. Instead, he pats me on the shoulder.
"I'm really sorry, Jim," he says.
That night, I lie with Mika in bed and read her Goodnight Moon. It's the first time I've read to her in months. The last time was when we visited Kira's folks and had to shut Yang down for the weekend. Mika's asleep by the time I reach the last page. I give her a kiss on her head and turn out the lights. Kira's in bed reading. "I guess I'm going to start digging now," I say. "Come here," she says, putting her book down. I cross the room and lie across our bed, my head on her belly.
"Do you miss him too?" I ask.
"Mm-hmm," she says. She puts her hand on my head and runs her fingers through my hair. "I think saying goodbye tomorrow is a good idea. Are you sure it's okay to have him buried out there?"
"Yeah, there's no organic matter in him. The guys at Quick Fix dumped his stomach canister."
I look up at our ceiling, the way our lamp casts a circle of light and then a dark shadow.
"I don't know how we're going to make it without him."
"Shh." Kira strokes my hair. "We'll figure it out. I spoke with Tina Matthews after you called me today. You remember her daughter, Lauren?"
"The clone?"
"Yes. She's home this semester. College wasn't working for her. Tina said Lauren could watch Mika if we need her to." I turn my head to look at Kira. I thought we didn't want Mika raised by a clone. "We're doing what we have to do. Besides, Lauren's a nice girl."
"She's got that glassy-eyed, apathetic look. She's exactly like her mother," I say.
Kira doesn't say anything. She knows I'm being irrational, and so do I. I sigh. I just really hoped we could keep clones out of our lives.
"For how long? Your brother and Margaret are planning on cloning this summer. You're going to be an uncle soon enough."
"Yeah," I say quietly. "Ever since I was handed Yang's voice box, time has slowed down. The light of the setting sun had stretched across the wood floors of our home for what seemed an eternity. Sounds have become crisper as well, as though until now I'd been living with earplugs. I think about the way Mika's eyelids fluttered as she slept, the feel of George's hand against my arm. I sit up, turn toward Kira, and kiss her. The softness of her lips make me remember the first time we kissed. Kira squeezes my hand. "You better start digging so I can comfort you tonight," she says.
I smile and ease myself off the bed.
Don't worry, Kira says. It'll be a good funeral.
In the hallway, on my way toward the staircase, the cracked door of Yang's room stops me. Instead of going down, I walk across the carpeting to his door, push it open, and flick on the light switch. There's his bed, perfectly made with the corners tucked in. A writing desk, a heavy oak dresser, and a closet full of black suits. On the wall is a poster of China that Brothers and Sisters Inc. sent us, and a pennant from the Tigers game I took Yang to. There's little in the minimalism of his decor to remind me of him. There is, however, a baseball glove on the shelf by his bed. This was a present Yang bought for himself with the small allowance we provided him. We were at Toys R Us when Yang placed the glove in the shopping cart. We didn't ask him about it, and he didn't mention why he was buying it. When we came home, he put it on the shelf near his tiger's pennant, and there it sat untouched. Along the windowsill, Yang's collection of dead moths and butterflies look as though they're ready to take flight. He collected them from beneath our bug zapper during the summer and placed their powdery bodies by the window. I walked over and examined the collection. There's the great winged Luna moth, with its two mock eyes staring at me, the mosaic of the monarch's wing, and a collection of smaller, nondescript brown and silvery gray moths. Kira once asked him about his insects. Yang's face illuminated momentarily, the lights beneath his cheeks burning extra brightly, and he said, "They're very beautiful, don't you think?" Then, as though suddenly embarrassed, he segued to a fun fact regarding the brush-footed butterfly of China.